here with us last Sunday afternoon. As you know, we started a series of lessons going through the, what we call the Hall of Fame Faith in Hebrews. And we're going to continue with that study tonight. And we're going to take a look at the first example that we see. If you've ever been to a football Hall of Fame or some other sports Hall of Fame, usually what you see as soon as you walk in the door is you see the statues of the players that are being honored. And as we walk right in here into Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 4, we come in contact with Abel, which you may have guessed from the Bible reading this evening. And so we're going to talk about Abel. In Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 4, we obviously know that Abel had a very short life, and we don't know a whole lot about him, except for the account that we see in Genesis and what's mentioned about him in Hebrews. Hebrews chapter 11, verse 4, by faith Abel offered to God a more acceptable sacrifice than Cain, through which he was commended as righteous, God commending him by accepting his gifts, and through his faith, though he died, he still speaks. So to understand why Abel is one of our heroes of faith, it's important that we understand that original account that we read. And otherwise, we really don't get to know a whole lot about him because his life was much too short. But that event that we read about Abel's life, where he and his brother both offered sacrifices to the Lord, and Abel brought his sacrifice that was acceptable to God, and Cain's was not. Cain brought of the things that he had grown, and Abel brought of his herds. And so in Genesis chapter 4, we see that God was not pleased with that, and Cain knew that God was not pleased with it. And usually what we focus on when we read that account in Genesis is we focus on Cain. And we focus on what happened to Cain afterwards and what Cain's attitude was and what Cain's attitude was toward his brother. When God asked him, "Where's your brother?" he said, "Am I my brother's keeper?" And so we obviously have a lot of lessons that we can learn from Cain. And we don't want to go in the way of Cain, which we're warned about in the Scriptures. But the Hebrew writer makes three points, I believe, right here in Hebrews, that we can look at in this lesson. And the Hebrew writer doesn't even mention Cain, which is interesting. The Hebrew writer doesn't say that, by lack of faith, Cain killed his brother. He doesn't talk about what Cain did wrong, but he talks about what Abel did right. So that's what we want to look at tonight. The first thing that we see that he did is that he offered a faithful sacrifice to God, which means that he offered faithful worship. And that's what we see that the Hebrew writer says. He offered something to God that was considered a faithful act of worship. He offered a better sacrifice than Cain. Abel's sacrifice, Abel's worship was accepted by God, and Cain's was not. So it's an interesting beginning here to this list of the heroes of faith, but also interesting when we go back to the creation and the things that are said in the book of Genesis, that this is really one of the first judgments that we see of God. Really, when Adam and Eve sinned, there's a judgment there too because of what happened to them after they sinned. But this is really one of the early judgments that we see that God makes, where God is displeased. And really, we live in a time when the religious world teaches that all that matters is that you worship God. And in fact, when I was working in the newspaper years ago in Panama City, there was a full-page ad, and a lot of the, if you remember what a newspaper is, there were these ads that had different ads for the churches in the area. And at the top of it, the banner said, attend the church of your choice. And about the third of the page was an editorial that was written by different churches every week. So different churches were invited to let it be their week where they could have the big space and write something. And the Bobby Witherington, who was preaching at the Beach Church of Christ, had the ad that week. And he called me at the paper and said, "Could you change that header on that ad?" And I said, "I don't know if I can or not, but let's." He said, "I don't like that it says attend the church of your choice. Can you say attend the church of God's choice?" And I said, "I don't know if I can get him to change it to that." But what we ended up changing it to was attend worship this Lord's Day. And so we made it generic like that instead of saying you know, something that's clearly wrong to say attend the church of your choice. So we kind of compromised with the editorial people over there, and so did make that change. Just saying that to say that many people wouldn't see anything wrong with that statement that had been there for years and years, attend the church of your choice. Well, is it my choice? Well, it's not really my choice, is it? It wasn't Abel's choice on what it was that he was to give. Maybe he would have liked to have done something else, but he gave what God wanted him to sacrifice. Cain made his own choice, and we see that that was not the right choice. So we're told that it doesn't matter what religion you pick as long as you have something that you pick. But Cain, you know, was clearly wrong here. Cain's not an unbeliever. He's not a heathen. In fact, we know that Cain had evidently spoken to God, and God spoke to him, as we see there in Genesis chapter 4. And we can't think that Cain didn't believe in God. He did. So what's the problem here? Is belief enough? Belief in God? Well, no, because what he did mattered to God. The way that he worshiped mattered. And it obviously matters how we worship. And so the idea that we can just drive down Highway 119 here and pick any number of churches that are on the street and every one is just as good as another, and I like the way that one looks, or I like the things that they do, I'll just go there. The notion that we can worship any way we want is wrong. If that were true, Cain's worship would have been acceptable to God as well. So Abel was able to follow what God had prescribed for worship, and Cain did not. And Cain was upset that his worship wasn't accepted. And God's response in verse 8 of chapter 4, he says, "Why are you angry and why has your face fallen? If you do well, will you not be accepted?" And so God is inferring here that Cain had a choice to either do well or not do well. And if you had done well, you would have been accepted. And so, you know, I wonder, you know, what would be our reaction, you know, if God just stopped our worship and told us it was not acceptable. You know, can you imagine what the response might be? Well, you know, I got out of bed and I got here and I got ready to be here at service. What more do you want from me? That was a real effort. You know, this is how I want to worship. You need to cut me a break. Nobody would ever think about saying that to God directly, but that's the way a lot of people feel about proper worship. That we have this idea, as long as we show up, you know, that our worship is good enough. Well, you know, Cain, you know, showed up, but his worship was not accepted. So obviously, probably most everybody here knows that how we worship God matters. And, you know, visitors that come from time to time, they may notice that there's some things that we do differently than other churches that they may have attended in the past. In fact, I was talking to one of you last week about the time that we had a couple of guests come in, sit on the second row, and it was a man and his wife, and he looked at the Lord's Supper like he'd never seen it before, but went ahead and took it, and as soon as I got up and started speaking and did not introduce him as the guest speaker, he realized that he was the guest speaker for this church that's across the street from us, and he had come to the wrong place. And so, the kind of looks on his face and somebody getting up and walking out on me before I got through with my introduction, you know, I'm used to people walking out, but really not that quickly. But he did, and you could see that this was different than what he expected, especially in his reaction to partaking of the Lord's Supper, which a lot of congregations don't do, or they don't do it on a regular basis. So, with that said, those that visit that may have gone other places, we'll see, well, we don't do things. There's things that we don't do here. There's things that we do that other places don't. We don't have a laser light show. We don't have movies or stage dramas or mechanical instruments, other things that may be seen elsewhere. And people may think, well, they don't have any money, you know, to have those things. That's not the point. You know, if those things were authorized in the Scriptures, we could have the money to do those things. And the reason that we don't do those is because nobody here thinks those things would be fun. I would be the first one that would want to do those things if they were authorized. But they're not. Abel teaches us something that's very important. You know, really from the beginning of creation, that we can't worship God however we want. We can't go to the church of our choice. We can't turn worship into entertainment or hobbies. And our worship is different because it's a conviction that how we worship matters to God. And God wants worship offered according to His will and not ours. I think it's very clear to see that that is why Abel is listed here as a man of faith, because he offered a better offering than Cain. Abel trusted that God wanted the sacrifice offered the way that God had said, and Cain didn't have enough trust, evidently, to do that. Cain trusted in himself, and his way was not as good as God's way. And simply put, we can't have that kind of arrogance before the Lord. When we worship, we need to certainly, give our best, and we can see that Abel did that. Abel brought the firstborn of the flock and the fat portions, and these were considered to be the very best by the Lord and the best that he could offer. And God continually wanted that from his worshipers, to offer their very best. And we can see even in the Old Testament that leftovers were not something that were accepted by God. And our worship to the Lord needs to be the best that we can give. And the effort that we all expend when we're together worshiping, whether you're leading, singing, or preaching, or you're listening, or praying, or whatever it might be, that God does not want mindless repetition. He wants our hearts to be speaking to God. He doesn't want us falling asleep while our eyes are closed and not listening to the prayer, or our minds drifting while we're supposed to be partaking of the Lord's Supper, remembering Christ's sacrifice. It's devotion and worship, because God wants us to give our best before Him, and Abel certainly did that. We also see that the Hebrew writer said that Abel was declared righteous through his obedience, and that's a good thing. That it was through this faithful offering that God commended Abel to us as an example of righteousness. His life wasn't just simply performing this offering. And if after making his sacrifice, I don't know how much time happened between the time that Cain and Abel offered their sacrifices and Cain's was accepted and Abel's wasn't, or if there was any kind of conversation between the two about, why are you so good and this kind of thing. If there was some kind of conflict between the two, we don't really read about that on Abel's side. What if Abel came and offered his sacrifice and he just went out and hated his brother? Maybe they clashed all the time. He had hatred for his brother. We certainly know from the Scriptures that's not the way that we ought to be, that we're going to offer our sacrifice or our worship without generating some faithful living also, that what we're doing is something that's consistent with the way that we live every day. One common complaint about the church by those that don't usually attend services anywhere is, I don't want to go there because the church is full of hypocrites. And I tell them, well, you go to the football game and you have to stand as band parents. They don't care about the football. If they did, they wouldn't come because the team's losing all the time. It's a stand full of hypocrites. Half the people there aren't football fans. Well, that's ridiculous, isn't it, that somebody would say something like that. But let's say, and you know what we do? We get on the defensive and say, well, no, the church isn't full of hypocrites. Well, maybe it is. Maybe some churches are full of hypocrites. But does that mean that you need to stay away from doing what God said to do? Faithful worship can only be generated through faithful living. And if people that come to worship would live faithfully, then the churches wouldn't be full of hypocrites. And certainly we don't want to have that charge be true against us. Our worship to the Lord is not going to be acceptable if we just go through the motions, if we don't live a life that's consistent with His will. It's really unreasonable or outrageous for us to think that, I can come on Sunday morning twice. I can come on Sunday afternoon. I can come on Wednesday night. I can be there every time that the doors are open when we have a gospel meeting. And that's really all that I have to do. Now, the rest of the week, I can do whatever it is that I want to do. I can say what I want to say. I can dress the way I want to dress. I I can use the kind of language that I want to use, and I won't be any different from the rest of the world the rest of the week, and have no regard for God, and stand whenever I want to. But I'm going to come on Sunday, and I'm going to look nice, and I'm going to sing, and I'm going to pray. Can we do that and think that kind of sacrifice is acceptable to God? Our worship is something that should be consistent with the life that we lead. And Jesus taught that principle in the Sermon on the Mount. In Matthew chapter 5, verse 21, he said, "You have heard it said to those of old, 'You shall not murder,' and whoever murders will be liable to judgment. But I say to you that everyone who is angry with his brother will be liable to judgment. Whoever insults his brother will be liable to the council. Whoever says, 'You fool,' will be liable to the fire of hell." So if you are offering your gift at the altar, and then there remember that your brother has something against you, leave your gift there before the altar and go. First be reconciled to your brother, and then come and offer your gift. So Jesus is saying that we need to think about what we've done in our life before we think about how we can make a proper act of worship. If we're aware of our sins, and we're aware of our offenses, we need to take care of those things. We don't need to keep hiding those things or glossing over those things or sweeping them under the carpet. We need not think that God accepts our worship if our life really reflects a lot of worldliness rather than godliness. So when you see the commendation that Abel gets here for his life, that he was declared righteous through faithful obedience, he was living a life of faithful obedience. It wasn't just this one act, but it was his life. And third point that we want to look at tonight is that faithfulness leaves a legacy. And really, the whole chapter here, the listing of all of these, what we call heroes of faith, you know, say something to us. The writer concludes by stating about Abel, "Though he died, he still speaks." And certainly, you know, Abel probably would not have been aware that his life would be recorded as a legacy of faith, and that thousands of years later that people are still going to be talking about what he did, and that his life of faith would be remembered and used as a teaching tool to the Hebrew Christians and to us as well. But we need to remember that, and I think we're all aware that we leave a legacy. We talked a lot about that last summer because that was our theme at our summer camp. And we've also talked about it, you know, time to time in our Sunday morning class or our classes on the Old Testament. We can see just recently that Joshua left a legacy of leadership, and that's why he was chosen. And Joshua and Caleb both left legacies that the other 10 spies did not, or that's a different kind of legacy, rather. They left a legacy, too, of disobedience, but they of obedience. And Abel here still speaks to us. We still examine his life, and the faithfulness of those who have gone on before us leave a legacy. And this church here at Elliottsville would not exist in its current way without the faithfulness of many who have lived before us. And you know, those that have been here a long time can look throughout the auditorium and see pews where other members used to sit. And you know, I always talk about Prince and Edith Schott and others that were here, that we can look at their lives and we can remember in a good way. I can't help but think about Brother Schott whenever we... What's the name of that song? Each Day I'll Do a Beautiful Life. That song, he led that every time that we had a singing. And I remember one time he had it so low that there was no way that I could hit the notes. And he stopped. And I thought, okay, he's going to raise it. He said, "I think I've got that too high. We need to lower it." And so I always remember that every time that we sing that. But you know, we remember the humorous things, but we also remember the faithfulness of them always being here and trying to beat the shots here to the building. And we hardly ever did because they were the first ones here. And we see that they left a legacy of faithfulness in this congregation. This congregation wouldn't be what it is without those who have come before and the ones that are here now that are also leaving behind an example of faithfulness. And we need to remember that. Our families also, you know, leave behind legacies of faith. Some of us are very blessed to have had the benefit of faithful parents and grandparents and great-grandparents, and maybe you know that's not what you have, but you've had others in your life perhaps that have been examples for you when it may not have been your family. But what will your family remember about you? Will you be remembered for your dedication to worship? Or will you be remembered, you know, by your kids as, well, he didn't act the same way at home that he acted around the brethren? Or will you be remembered for your knowledge and your devotion to God's Word? And our spiritual choices, you know, greatly impact not only our lives, but those that come after us. When you look at the rest of chapter 4 of Genesis, and you know, you know, what Cain's, you know, curse was, what his spiritual legacy was, it was one of wickedness. However, you know, Seth and Abel both had a legacy that was of faithfulness. And so the question that we need to think about is ourselves. What are we concerned about leaving our children? Many people are concerned about what they're going to leave them physically. Are they going to be in good shape, you know, physically and materially? But that's not the most important thing. And we also need to remember that simply bringing children to services is not enough. It's not, that's not a legacy. I mean, it is sort of, because you need to do that. But there's got to be a lot more than that. Are you teaching them the way of the Lord at home? Do they see you involved in spiritual things? Do you share with them the Bible and stories of the Bible? Do you show them that God comes before everything else when there's a decision made about where to be and what to do and how things are to be prioritized in your life, whether it's sports, school, homework, hobbies, work, whatever it might be? Are they going to remember that it was always God that was first, or was there something else that was more important? And we can ask ourselves, what kind of legacy are we leaving, not only for our family, but for the local church? Will you be remembered as one who was faithful and served the Lord and was one that helped and made the church grow and was an encouragement to others? Or sometimes people are also remembered for other things, that they were not peaceful and that they were ones that caused bitterness and strife. And we don't want to be remembered that way. Will you be remembered, as we talked about this morning, one who is hospitable, one who is an example to unbelievers and to believers alike? So are we having an impact in this area? So what is your spiritual legacy with God? This section of Hebrews is very interesting because there's lessons that can be drawn out from each one of these examples that we see. We spent here just a few minutes talking about Abel, and we really don't have a whole lot that we know about him, but we know enough that we can certainly draw some great lessons out of his life for ourselves. That he was one that engaged in faithful worship. He took God's commands regarding sacrifice seriously and did those things. And because he did that, he was declared righteous, and he was set up as an example of one that we can follow because he left a legacy of faithfulness. We don't want our life to look like Cain. We want it to be like Abel, that we believe in God, we bring our worship, and we know what is acceptable, and we live a life that is consistent with that faith and trust in God. So I hope these things will be an encouragement to you and give you some things to think about as you ponder the example and the legacy that you leave and the good that you can do, not only in your family, but here in the congregation as well. If we can help you in any way, respond to the invitation tonight, we'd invite you to come while we stand and sing.